Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we're talking about federal immigration policy impact on families. Attorney General Jeff Sessions this week announced plans to roll out a zero-tolerance policy for anyone illegally crossing the border.
So we're sending a message to the world, really. The border is not open. The border is not open. Don't come unlawfully.
Sessions vowed that to achieve that end, he would divide parents from their children. Longtime Columbus resident Edith Espinal, 7 months ago, sought sanctuary in a local church to avoid those consequences of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The Columbus Mennonite Church, where she is living tonight, hosts a larger community conversation about keeping children with their mothers. Edith is one of three women that are highlighted in that conversation. She joins us by phone. Welcome, Edith Espinal.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Very well, thank you. Edith is joined by interpreter and lead organizer with the Columbus Sanctuary Collective, Ruben Castilla-Herrera. Welcome, Ruben.
Good to be here, Ann.
Also joining us is the Reverend Kate Shaner of First Community Church. Reverend Shaner supports Edith Espinal in her quest to stay in the U.S. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Edith, what do you want to achieve by taking sanctuary in the Columbus Mennonite Church?
Mi propósito es de poder regresar a casa y estar con mi familia para poder tener una vida normal con mis hijos.
So the purpose is really to have a normal life as a mother and to be at home with my children.
Is taking sanctuary in the church what's actually going to achieve that, though?
Definitely.
How so?
Teniendo una lucha constante y teniendo el apoyo de la comunidad y gracias a Dios todos me están apoyando y pues teniendo su apoyo de ellos seguiré luchando hasta el final.
So the win, the victory, is in the struggle, into continual struggle, and I know that we have a community here at the church and a community that's supporting us, so the community is here, and also I have faith in God that it will happen. So the victory is in the struggle and support.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about immigration policies that separate parents from their children. These, of course, are families that illegally cross the border. My guest is Edith Espinal. She's a Mexican immigrant mother. She's been in sanctuary at a Columbus church for the last 7 months. Her interpreter, Ruben Castilla-Herrera, is with us as well. And also with us in the studio, the Reverend Kate Shaner of First Community Church. Edith, how did you come to the United States? Can you give us a short history of your life here?
Okay. La primera vez que llegué a Estados Unidos fue en 1995. Yo pasé con mi papá siendo una menor de edad, pero yo no sabía que iba a entrar ilegalmente al país. La última vez que entré a Estados Unidos fue en el año 2013. Prácticamente no entré de ilegal. Inmigración me dio un permiso, un parole para poder entrar al país y poder pelear mi caso de asilo con mi hijo Brandon González, que él es mexicano y tiene 19 años.
So originally I came in 1995 with my father. I was a minor and I didn't know what was happening, much like the experience of dreamers. But then I came back. I went back to Mexico and I came back in 2013. And I was allowed what they call parole by the U.S. Immigration Services, which I wasn't undocumented. They allowed me to come in, reenter, in order to fight my asylum case here in this country.
And what is the basis for your asylum case?
Son muchas cosas personales que pasaron en México que, pues, por el momento no han sido públicas por tenemos un poco de discreción en este caso por asuntos legales.
So I hesitated because it's a very personal situation, me as a woman, and so I'm not prepared to talk about that publicly. We haven't spoken about that publicly, in thinking that we need to keep that with the legal aspect of it. And so it's a very personal case, an experience I had as a woman.
Keith Chiener, what do you see the outcome of a sanctuary like this? What do you think comes of this long term?
Well, I just want to say hello to Edith and Ruben. I think the outcome long term is that we return to policies in our country that remember that family is sacred, and that no matter where you're from, our policies need to respect that, that we're not separating parents and children. And that women very often are resolute in standing not only for their children, but for their families and themselves, and saying to the greater community, what's happening is wrong. And for Edith, her bravery and her ability to live at the Columbus Mennonite Church, be separated from her family, to speak on radio programs like this, and to say, I will be the one who stands up and says, we can't take this anymore. We can't do this to families in the United States anymore. So I think the long-term result is going to be that people start to have the conversation that we need to be having here in the U.S. about immigration policy.
One of Edith's children is an American citizen born in the United States. Two of them are seeking legal status. They're in the court on the court system now, one in 2019 and one in 2020. They're expected to have their cases heard. Is there any concern, Kate Chiener, that what she's doing could affect their cases, could reflect on them in any way? Is there protections for them?
Well, I would refer that question back to Edith, okay, so that she can answer that. I think one of my responsibilities as not only a mom and a woman, but a faith leader, is to make sure that the voices of those that are being impacted directly are heard. So I think Edith should answer that question, okay, and let her tell you her fears about that.
Yeah. Ruben, did Edith hear that question?
Can you repeat the question briefly?
What are there any concerns that the action she's taking by, you know, her taking sanctuary in the church could reflect on the cases for her two children who are seeking legal status in the United States?
Al principio, antes de entrar en santuario, sí estaba un poco preocupada por mi hijo Brandon, que tiene su corte en el 2020, y actualmente es mi esposo el próximo que también tiene su corte en el 2019, pero platicando con la abogada, ella dijo que mientras ellos tengan su corte, pues pensamos que inmigración respeta todavía eso.
So to answer your question, yes, I was concerned about initially about my family, specifically Brando, who has a asylum case coming up, as well as my husband Manuel. Mm. And so, yes, I was concerned about that. But as in consultation with my attorneys, I was assured that their court dates are actually not till Brando is in 2020, and my husband's in 2019.
Is your husband 2019? Okay.
Yeah. So they're hopefully safe at that till then.
I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, that attorneys have told Edith and others like her around the country that she'll probably never get legal status because of seeking sanctuary.
El estar en santuario es una lucha que ha sido que es una lucha de resistencia, y hemos visto casos pasados que la gente que está en santuario ha podido salir legalmente de santuario. Y ese es mi propósito. No saldré de santuario hasta que yo pueda salir legalmente de aquí.
So the being in sanctuary is actually a resistance movement against the system, against ICE, and And what we have heard and from attorneys as well, and we know that people who have been in sanctuary have been able to come out, but not without that resistance and staying in sanctuary. So I plan to stay here until that happens. So we're hopeful that it will happen based upon just the opposite of what you said, that there has been people that have been let go.
Okay. And Edith, you still do see your family. They visit you. They sometimes stay with you there. How do you spend your days? What is your life like?
Pues por el momento mi vida ha cambiado mucho porque hay días que puedo ver a mis hijos, hay días que no los puedo ver. Y cuando ellos vienen, pues comemos juntos, pasan la noche juntos conmigo. Y pues hoy, más que nada, en México es el Día de las Madres. Y pues en la mañana cuando desperté, no pude obtener un abrazo de ellos por la situación en la que estamos. Y pues ha sido muy difícil, pero no dejaré de luchar hasta que esté junto con mi familia.
So my life has changed a lot, I have to say that, because there are days that I can see them and days that they can't, I can't. And I mean, but they do come here and we eat together in the evening and come together at night. And so even though I can see them, it's still difficult. But I do want to point out that today is Mother's Day in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so this morning I woke up without them there, without being able to get a hug from them or to see them. And that is very difficult for me.
Edith, there are people out there, people listening right now, that say you are not in the United States legally. You should leave. It's as simple as that for some people. How do you respond to that?
Lo que más importa en este momento para mí, mi familia, es poder regresar a casa, de estar con ellos juntos, y no tengo que preocuparme por pensamientos de otras personas. Y mi corazón siempre está pensando en mis hijos. Mm. Siempre pensaré en el amor que les tengo a ellos y poder regresar a casa.
So my primary thought right now as I'm in sanctuary is that I want to return home, which is my struggle and my fight. And so I don't have the time or really the need to really focus on what other people are saying against what you just mentioned. And so my focus is to be with my family, to fight my fight, and not to get off track that. And I believe that's how we will win.
Edith Espinal, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Quiero invitar a todas las personas que nos acompañen esta noche. Tendremos un evento llamado Tres Madres aquí en la Iglesia Menonita. Por favor, acompáñenos esta noche a las 7. Y pues muchas gracias.
So thank you so much. But I do also want to invite people to the event that we're having tonight called Three Mothers, Tres Madres. Tonight at the Mennonite Church at 7 o'clock, we would like you here to hear the Three Mothers story. Thank you so much.
That's right. And thanks to you, Ruben Castilla Herrera. Right. The Columbus Mennonite Church, where Edith Espinal is living, is hosting a larger community conversation about keeping children with their mothers. Edith is one of the three women who will be participating in that conversation. We will continue our conversation about the issue of how ICE manages families and separates families, and the United States immigration policies are how it is separating families increasingly. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about immigration policy that breaks up families, separating parents from children. The New York Times in April reported that at least 700 children were taken from their parents since October, including more than 100 children under the age of four. Still with us, First Community Church Reverend Kate Shaner. Thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome.
Joining us is refugee organizer at Community Refugee and Immigration Services, Jackie Kifuko. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
And by phone, National Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. Welcome back, Ira.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
Ira, so far ICE has not tried to end Edith Espinal's sanctuary in a Columbus church or that of several others around the country who have similarly sought sanctuary in churches. What do you make of the policy that has ICE stopping short of getting them from churches, hospitals, and a few other places?
Well, you know, people try to portray ICE as some kind of stormtrooper unit that they go in and just randomly roust people and ignore people's rights. You know, they are discreet. They try their best to enforce the law and do it in a way that it conforms with the way we should treat people. But we also have to enforce laws. I mean, that is really what ICE's job is, to enforce laws, to make sure that people, when they come to the United States, do so legally, and that they have a valid claim to be here. And we also have to recognize that not everybody in the entire world who wants to come to the United States can do so. Every nation on earth sets limits on immigration, and it's not because we want to be mean to people and keep them out. It is because we recognize that while coming to the United States is always in the interest of the person who's doing it, nobody gets up and says, hey, let's go to the United States, we'll be worse off. The question is, what impact does it have on everybody else in American society? And that is the reason we have immigration laws. As I said, it's the reason every nation on earth has immigration laws. We do the best we can. For the most part, ICE are made up of people who are conscientious about their jobs, who try to treat people with respect and dignity, and do the best they can.
So you're okay with the likes of Edith Espinal taking sanctuary then?
Well, you know, what we need to do is maybe start going after some of the people who are providing sanctuary to discourage them from doing this. But, you know, each case has to be handled discreetly as an individual case. ICE makes its decisions based on how they're going to carry out the laws. You know, it's hard to sit here and say, you know, the ICE should go after this person, not after that person. But at some point, you do have to enforce laws to make it clear that we're not going to allow people to abuse them.
That's what ICE was doing for a while. They were saying, we're going to go after the criminals. We're going to go after violent criminals. We're going to go after people who have been kicked out several times and just keep coming back. They had different categories, different levels of importance to ICE. That's changed. How do you feel about that, Ira?
Well, they still do go place priority on going after criminals. But look, every law enforcement agency in the country deals with these sorts of things. Obviously, the Columbus Police Department prioritizes the arrest of violent criminals. But it doesn't mean that if they happen to catch you shoplifting, that they're not going to enforce the law against you. So what has changed is that, you know, they're still prioritizing the removal of criminal aliens, but they have said we are not going to simply ignore all other violations of immigration law. If you do that, you're essentially nullifying the law, and that really isn't within the discretionary authority of any police department.
Well, not police department, but ICE does have policies, it has resources, that kind of a thing that it needs to make priorities with.
Right, or even some executive branch. You know, the law says that if you're in the country illegally, you are subject to removal. And, you know, as I said, we can't simply say you can only be removed from the United States if you're violating U.S. immigration law and commit some serious offense. There has to be a penalty for violating U.S. immigration laws. And every law enforcement agency in the country prioritizes going after the most egregious criminals, but it doesn't mean they stop enforcing laws against everybody else.
Jackie Kifuko, what do you make of that? I mean, the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, the Obama administration, both ramped up ICE efforts to deport people back to where they came from. The Trump administration has taken it a step further, but still it's been a long-term process of ramping up the deportations.
Okay, thank you so much. Apparently, my focus has always been on refugees who have been resettled in the U.S., who are picked on from different countries. For example, for me, I was in Kenya, Nairobi, and I was selected. This was not me who did it, but U.S. comes in and selects you and brings you here. So in the process, I happened when I fled my country, I left one of my sons behind, and UNHCR tried so much to help me relocate with him, and it was hard. Bringing me here, I had to do a lot of paperwork. I was promised when I get to the U.S., I'll have my son. So regarding the policies in the country, I'm not in the side, but I do focus on refugees who are brought in here, and the policies are blocking them from reuniting with their children or their families.
Ira Melman, what about that, the issue of separating families? Why does it have to be that way?
Well, I'm not quite sure how her case worked, but it appears that she came as a refugee, that she was acknowledged to be a refugee before she arrived here in the United States.
Right.
And that's a very different situation from people showing up at the border and making claims that they deserve political asylum in this country. Under our law, everybody who offers a claim of political asylum must be afforded some kind of hearing. And we can quickly determine, in many cases, whether the claims have any merit. Those cases that do have merit should go into the system and be adjudicated. And if people do have meet the qualifications for political asylum, then they should be permitted to bring their immediate family, spouses, and minor children with them. But what we have now is a system where people are coming to the border offering patently bogus claims of political asylum because they know it will get them into the country. And particularly if they come with children in tow, they know that they cannot be detained for more than 3 weeks, that they'll be released out into the population. If they show up for their hearings at all, it could be years and years before there's any determination. In many cases, they never even show up for the hearing. So we have to stop the abuse of our political asylum system. And, you know, the policy that Jeff Sessions announced the other day applies to people who do not meet that first, cannot get over that first hurdle of presenting a prima facie case for why they deserve political asylum here in the United States. What he is intending to do is to stop the abuse that's been going on. These are humanitarian policies. We should not allow people to use them as a way to get into the United States when they have no legal claim to be here.
Jackie, when you came here, you knew that one of your sons had to be left behind, but you came anyway. Did they promise you that they would work to reunite you? How so?
Exactly. So what I'm doing right now is to connect with mothers in my category who have been here for a while. I apparently have been here for 1 year, and I have several mothers who have been here 3 years, 4 years. They applied for a family reunification with their children because it's so hard to explain all this. We all go through different circumstances, and we happen to leave some of our children behind. Recently, I was working with a mother who is an ACID victim. She's been here for 2 years.
She's an ACID. ACID.
Yeah. Yes. No, ACID. Her husband
ACID.
Banned her.
ACID. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry for that.
That's okay.
So she's living alone, doing two jobs, and she has all these scars. She has to go through a lot of surgeries. Recently, she went through her fifth surgery, and she applied for her children to come and reunite with her. Her case was approved last year in January, but up to now, all the answers we get is the policies. The policies will not allow your children to get into the United States, not until everything's worked upon. So we kind of like find the struggles with the mothers who've been here for a while and want to unite with the children. But there is a policy which we don't understand. We come from countries which are not under security advisor opinion. There's a list of 10 Muslim countries that are on that list. But I and that mother and others don't come from such countries, and we're wondering why. Right now, we are going to celebrate Mother's Day, and we cannot have our children by our sides, you know. And it's a struggle, you know, coping up with daily bills and emotions of not having your child close to you.
Ira Melman, what about the policies that Jackie is describing? Why bring somebody over here and not let their children come with them. What's the logic there for you, Ira Melman?
You know, I don't know. I mean, these were decisions that were made by the, you know, in the case of the State Department. It's hard to know the individual circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I mean, obviously we're dealing with bureaucracies, and not just bureaucracies, but overwhelmed bureaucracies. And part of that is the fact that you have a lot of people who are attempting to defraud the system, and it kind of clogs up the whole system for people who have legitimate claims. And that's one of the reasons we need to crack down on people who are trying to game the system to try to use it as a foot in the door so that they can get into the United States and disappear. If we were able to eliminate that sort of abuse, then the, you know, people like Jackie, her children would be able to make it through the procedures much more expeditiously. But it's, you know, it is impossible for me to know what the holdup is. You probably have to talk to the Department of Homeland Security or the State Department.
So there, as far as you know, Ira, there's no policy to particularly reunite. There's no overarching sense of that the American policy should be to reunite at all costs.
Well,
when somebody's here illegally.
Yes, you know, people who are here legally, who have been found to be legitimate refugees, there should be a policy of trying to reunite them with their immediate family, spouses and unmarried minor children. Again, I mean, if we had a system that was working properly, that wasn't being abused, perhaps that would expedite the process. But, you know, there are all sorts of considerations. Everybody has to go through background checks. Each individual case is different, and only the people who are adjudicating these cases know precisely the reasons.
You know, from what I'm reading, a lot of the clogging of the system is because the ICE is going after so many people now that don't have any criminal past, that don't have any other. I know you might quibble with my word only, but the only violation is the fact that they entered the country illegally.
Well, first of all, ICE isn't determining who comes into the United States as a refugee. If Jackie's children...
Well, I'm not talking about refugees, but I'm talking about the larger system.
Well, I mean, again, you've got to have a system in place that discourages people from breaking our laws. If you're going to have laws, there has to be some kind of deterrent. You know, if you're saying to people, don't come to the United States illegally, but if you get here, as long as you don't commit a crime, it's just fine, then we might as well not have laws at all. And it kind of undermines the whole reason why we have immigration laws in the first place. Just because you haven't committed a crime doesn't mean that you should be allowed to remain in the United States. It doesn't mean that your presence here isn't affecting or adversely affecting other people in American society. And it also doesn't mean that, you know, you're not jumping the line ahead of other people who are going through the procedure the proper way. So we can't just say that, look, you know, the guy came here, he broke our immigration law, but he hasn't done anything else. And by the way, in most cases, people are doing other things. They're committing document fraud, identity fraud. These are serious crimes, especially if it's your identity that's being stolen. But nevertheless, the fact that, you know, that somebody hasn't gone out and committed a violent crime doesn't mean we should forget about the fact that they've violated our immigration laws.
Reverend Kate Shaner, what do you make of what Ira Melman is saying? It's they're breaking a law.
Well, a couple things. I'm going to speak to our moral vision as a country. And I think it's easy for us to get caught up in policy. But for me, as a mom and a faith leader, I need to return to the notion that this is a moral conversation. And the immigration policy in the United States has always been family-based, and family has been the foundation of our communities. So our parents and our children and our children, our siblings and spouses, they're the most important people in our lives. When we hear things like folks are just appearing at the border because they know they can get in here if they bring their children, that certainly has not been my experience to folks that I've spoken with, nor my lived experience as a mom. I'm going to tell you a story. I was recently with young people from my own institution, and we were in the Dominican Republic, and we were driving to the airport to go home. And I said, I want you to look at the ocean out there. It's all you can see. I said, imagine if your choice as a parent your only choice was to stay somewhere where you were in immediate danger, where your lives were being threatened, you couldn't feed your children, or jump in that ocean and hope that you survived. Imagine if that was your choice. That's the conversation that we need to be having around immigration. Mothers are going to fight until their last breath to save their children. And for us, as people who live in the United States, and specifically people of faith, we are called to hold each life sacred. All lives that present to us. You know, interestingly, about this program that that says that I believe Kirsten Nielsen, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, stated that separating families may discourage parents from seeking refuge in America. Well, what we can say is if I'm afraid my child is going to die, if I'm afraid I can't feed my child, if there's a way I can walk to safety or ride to safety and get my children to an abundant life, which we're all called to as human beings, I am going to try that. What we know by statistic after statistic and story after story is that separating children goes against not only who we are called to be as United States citizens, but it goes against everything that we know scientifically to be good for families and good for children. There was an amazing op-ed written by a pediatrician, Dr. Colleen Kraft, in the New York Times. And she was speaking of her own experience when trying to assist these children who had been taken and separated from their parents at the border. And she said that separating these children goes against everything that she has taught and been taught to parents for over 30 years into what is good for children. That it, studies overwhelmingly demonstrate irreparable harm caused by breaking up family. Prolonged exposure to highly stressful situations can disrupt children's brain architecture and affect his or her short and long-term health. Again, these parents are given two untenable options. Parents who have chosen to walk with their children to safety, they have been given two options. They can return with their children to a home country and the conditions that force them to flee in the first place. Or they can endure being detained sometimes halfway across the country from their children. Contact is limited, and the separation makes it hard for parents to provide support for the children's asylum cases. In some cases, parents have been deported, leaving a child behind in government custody.
We will continue our conversation. That was Reverend Kate Shaner of First Community Church, an advocate for families seeking to be reunified as they await the management of their cases for legal status in the United States. Also with us, Jackie Kifuko. She's a refugee organizer at Community Refugee and Immigration Services. And Ira Melman. He's a national media director spokesman for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about immigration policy that breaks up families, separating parents from children. Still with us, First Community Church Reverend Kate Shaner, refugee organizer at Community Refugee and Immigration Services, Jackie Kifuko, who was also separated from her children, and by phone, National Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ira Melman, we were talking about Edith Espinal earlier. She has sought sanctuary for the past 7 months at a church in Columbus. Two of her children have filed for legal status. Her husband has filed for legal status. So has one of her children. Their cases come up in 2019 and 2020, respectively. Some people, you know, have said, why should they be given consideration when she's breaking the law? Should there be a connection between her actions and their status as citizens, or as, you know, their legal status in the United States?
Well, look, I mean, if the children have a claim, they should be allowed to pursue it. I mean, obviously, that is what the system is designed to do. But, you know, people who don't have a legal claim shouldn't be allowed to just remain in the United States because they feel that they're better off here. And you know, listening to Reverend Shaner, I mean, certainly we all understand that the vast majority of the people on the planet would be better off living in a country like the United States or some other developed Western country. This is not what our asylum and refugee system were designed to deal with, however. They were designed to deal with political persecution at the hands of governments. But what we are facing now is a situation where the entire Western world is going to have to come up with some kind of way of dealing with these things, because we're talking potentially about hundreds of millions, billions of people who kind of fit the description that Reverend Shaner described of that mother. The answer to everybody's problems can't be go to the United States or go to Germany. There has to be other ways of dealing with it. You know, as part of the world community, the United States needs to participate, but ultimately it's got to come down to people in those countries standing up and saying, we've had enough. We are going to make some changes here in this country. That is the only way things improve. And you know, it's easy for me to sit here and tell other people, you know, you've got to make that sacrifice. But quite frankly, nothing ever changes. If Nelson Mandela hadn't sat 27 years in prison, things would not have changed in South Africa. It requires some sacrifice, but the answer to everybody's problem can't be, I'm just going to pick up and go someplace else. There are 7.5 billion people on the planet. Everybody can't move someplace else.
Jackie Kifuko, tell us about your situation. Would you rather be in the United States, or would you rather be safe and sound back in the country that you came from, if you had a choice?
Absolutely. Being far away from my son and not knowing when I'll ever see him again breaks my heart several times. And at the time of my resettlement, we had to go through a lot of counseling to accept getting to the United States, because I didn't know anyone here. I didn't know the system, and I didn't know what it means being to the United States. Yes, I appreciate I was given a chance to live once again, if I can say, because being a refugee in a country where you're not safe again with another son was not making sense. So it took me a while. I actually was direct with UNHCR. I told them I'm not comfortable going where I don't know. And I'm not comfortable knowing that I'm leaving the other side of me behind. But in case situations back home are good, to be honest, the pain I've gone through as a refugee for three years, and the 4 years of not being with my son, I'd rather go to my son.
Mm. Yeah. Reverend Shaner, your experiences with refugees and immigrants that are, you know, kind of what forces, I think that Ira said something that, you know, most people would be better off being in a Western country where things are more advanced and there's less overt violence.
You know, I think that's interesting because it's certainly not what people say to me. People want to remain in their home countries that they love, where they know, where they have family, where they have community, where they know the culture. Nobody wants to flee from terror and violence. That's not that's not who God calls us to be as a global community. So that isn't my experience in speaking with people. I was just speaking with a Venezuelan teacher who came seeking asylum to a different country, not our own, not the U.S., who said to me, "I want to go home. I want to go home." And I think I'd like to address something that Iris said, specifically from a faith perspective. He said that Nelson Mandela sat for 27 years in order to affect change. What I would propose is that Edith Espinal and Jackie, they're going to sit until they can affect change. They're going to sit and peacefully remind this country that we were, our values have always been that family is sacred. They have always been family reunification, that it's not right. That's a moral issue to make family choose between a child and country. And so I would argue that Edith is our representative and our kind of Nelson Mandela for this moment. And this leads me to a greater invitation for your listeners. It's important for us to see each other as human beings and to hear each other's stories. Tonight at the Columbus Mennonite Church at 7 p.m., they will have an opportunity to hear stories from three women who won't be with their children for Mother's Day. And so I invite folks who want to learn more, who want to be involved in creating that beloved community that we're called to come this evening at 7 and listen to these stories so that they can hear for themselves.
We'll have a link about that event on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'd like to compliment you for covering this topic again. It's important. And I'd like to ask, I would like to agree with Ira, basically, that we cannot be the refuge of the entire world. My father was an electrical engineer and taught me the virtue of boundary conditions. Suppose that we dropped all of our entrance requirements completely. As he said, hundreds of millions, perhaps billions of people would come into this country. Now, we've got about 330 million presently. If we took another billion in, that would quadruple our population. And you've done stories on the infrastructure falling apart in this country. Mm-hmm. What would happen to our highways, our bridges, our sewer systems, our water systems, if our population quadrupled in a matter of a few years?
Kate Chaner.
Well, what if? That's a large question. Mm-hmm. But what I would advocate is that you go to the USCIS.gov, which is the information space on how folks who are coming to the country, the vetting process that they have, and in order to get green cards and things like that. And you'll see that our borders really aren't open. We do have a process. It's an outdated system. And so we certainly need to work. But check out that information for yourself. That might help allay some fears about just billions of people coming to the U.S. And the U.S. really isn't the only country that accepts refugees and asylums. But check out those statistics for yourself. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chris. And Fred in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I remember the boat people crisis we had under the first Bush and Clinton, and it seems Clinton figured out how to solve that, how to get people to stop coming in those little boats. And I think what he did was he just beefed up our consulates in Haiti, and it seemed to have solved the situation. So I guess my question is, what can we learn from the way we handled that situation, and can we apply that to Central America?
Ira Melman.
Well, you know, you mentioned Bill Clinton. Not only did he do that, he also stopped a similar sort of abuse of our asylum policy back when he was president. Instead of the border, you had people showing up at airports making bogus claims for political asylum, knowing that they would be released into the country and we'd never see them again. What he did, you know, finally said, okay, enough of this. I'm going to put adjudicators at the airport. You come, you make your case to this adjudicator. The adjudicator will determine whether it has any merit. If it has no merit, we're putting you back on a plane back to the country that you came from. You know, unfortunately, that is necessary. Nobody feels good about this. We all understand. You know, Reverend Shaner said we often understand the humanity of all of everybody, and I think Americans, by and large, do. We understand, we empathize with the reasons that people want to come to the United States. We also understand that people would prefer to stay in their home countries if conditions allowed for that. But, you know, the changes have to be made so that people can stay. And, you know, it is very nice for people to come to the United States and, you know, try to affect change back in their home country from here. But, you know, history has shown us that that never works. Change happens only from within. You know, we've seen this in Cuba, where we took all the dissidents out of Cuba, and the Castros have been in power now up until, what, about a week or so ago. Just, the only reason they're not in power now is because they're either dead or so old that they can't govern anymore. Change has to happen because people within those countries stay and stand up to the powers that are oppressing them.
Fred, thanks a lot for that call. A federal judge last week heard arguments about whether the government should be barred from separating asylum-seeking families in immigration detention facilities. The Trump administration has said that separating families could be a deterrent for those who come to the U.S. seeking asylum. The American Civil Liberties Union has argued that that violates the due process rights of mothers who are separated from their children while detained in these facilities. Ira Melman, what about due process rights?
Well, they do have due process. The separation only applies to people who are posing fraudulent claims of asylum here in the United States. People who pose at least plausible claims are put into the system. They are generally released and reunited with their children in a very short amount of time. The effort here is to prevent people from coming here and just saying, I want political asylum with no legitimate claim whatsoever, and count on the fact that we're going to release them and say, you know, come back in 2020 or 2021 for your hearing. There has to be some measure of control here to prevent people from abusing the system so that we can afford people who do have legitimate claims the full opportunity to make those claims.
Kate Chainer.
Well, I think that, again, I'm going to return to the family being the foundation of the U.S. and our communities, and that's why the foundation of our immigration system was focused on families, and we can't turn our backs on that. And I think fundamentally, family separation is anathema to basic decency and human rights. To use children as pawns goes against all we know about who we are as a country. And I think, again, speaking as a person of faith, I'm going to live by faith and not fear of the other. And at the heart of my faith and at the faith that surrounds, I think Columbus specifically is a shared belief that the family is sacred no matter where you're from. And our policies need to respect that.
Reverend Kate Shaner of First Community Church, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Ira Melman, National Media Director, spokesperson for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Thanks again for joining us, as always.
Thanks.
Also with us, Jackie Kifuko. She's a refugee organizer at Community Refugee and Immigration Services. She's also a mother who's separated from her children as a refugee. She will be among three women who gather tonight to talk about motherhood and separation from your children under these circumstances and others as we approach Mother's Day. So we'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Jackie Kifuko, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.